Now, one thing I need to address first is the language question. Devasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Today's verse is found in the third chapter, text number 13. Yajna for sense enjoyment. Translation. The devotees of the Lord are released from all kinds of sins because they eat food which is offered first for sacrifice. Others who prefer food for personal sense enjoyment verily eat only sin. Purport. The devotees of the Supreme Lord, or the persons who are in Krishna consciousness, are called santas, and they are always in love with the Lord, as it is described in the Brahma Sanghita. Premanjada churita bhakti vilochaneena santasadeva hridayesho vilokayanti. The santas. When you go like this, it means someone thinks of you. The santas, being always in a compact of love with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Govinda, the giver of all pleasures, or Mukunda, the giver of liberation, or Krishna, the all-attractive person, cannot accept anything without first offering it to the Supreme Person. Therefore, such devotees always perform yajnas in different modes of devotional service, such as shravanam, kirtanam, smaranam, archanam, etc. And these performances of yajnas keep them always aloof from all kinds of contamination of sinful association. In the material world. Others who prepare food for self or sense gratification are not only thieves, but also the eaters of all kinds of sins. How can a person be happy if he is both a thief and sinful? It is not possible. Therefore, in order for people to become happy in all respects, they must be taught to perform the easy process of Sankirtan Yajna in full Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, there can be no peace or happiness in the world. Yajna shishta sina shanto mucchante sarvakil bishai bunjate te tvagham papa ye pachantyatmakaranat. Translation. The devotees of the Lord are released from all kinds of sins because they eat food which is offered first for sacrifice. Others who prepare food for personal sense enjoyment verily eat only sin. Namam Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale Simate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavari Paskatyade Shatarine Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Sivashadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. here the devotee of the Lord is described to be Shanta, or fully satisfied due to his love for Krishna. Someone who is in love with Krishna is always satisfied. Someone who is in love with someone else is never satisfied. That's the fact of life. In this text, we hear one of the symptoms of such love, which is to offer something to the other person. A passive loving mood is not satisfied. Satisfactory. There must be activity. There must be the act of giving. So a devotee who tries to develop his dormant love for Krishna has to offer his food to Krishna first. He actually offers Krishna food. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we hear of many pastimes in relationship to prasadam. For instance, we hear of the bags of Raghava Pandit. Raghava Pandit used to cook with great devotion for his deity Gopal, but he also prepared throughout the years these huge bags which he filled with prasadam. Yes, Chakravarti, our prasadam distributing star. Raghava Pandit filled several bags, Chakravarti, with the most exquisite of delicacies, which were brought once in a year to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He would regularly take some of these lasting sweets from the bag and eat them. But asked when he would take his meal, where is the sweet from Raghava Pandit's bags? And his servant Govinda Das would then supply that. Once, after the devotees had visited Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for the occasion of Ratha Yatra, they all brought their presents they gave it to the servant of Govinda Das. You can imagine something like a few thousand devotees had assembled to participate with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the Ratha Yatra ceremony. So the whole ceremony, the whole festival was overcrowded with Chaitanya Bhaktas, who all brought their preparations for the Lord to taste. A whole house, it is described, filled up with preparations which the devotees had brought for Chaitanya. And Govinda Das was always supplying every day some of the preparations to Chaitanya. We can imagine that the vegetables and maybe dal and other such preparations had to be cooked fresh, and then the prasadam which the devotees had brought was added to this. It must have been sweets or savories, pickles, and preparations which most probably no one of us has ever heard about, preparations which lasted for long. So they always came to Govinda in the evening and said, what did Chaitanya eat? Did he eat my preparation? Govinda didn't want to lie and just say yes, and he liked it very much, but he just came back to Chaitanya and said, my lord, it's getting crowded here with prasadam and with personal requests that you please eat it, and so on. And Mahaprabhu said, well, I can only eat so much, and I'm also sannyasi, I'm supposed to be renounced, I can't eat so much. But the devotees always pressure me And they want to bribe me to bring their preparation on your plate. And what to do? What to do, said Chaitanya. I have only a stomach like this. No, said Govinda. You are cheating me. You are no one else than the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who every day eats alone in the Puri temple 54 offerings. And all over the world, preparations are offered to you and you eat them. What is the problem for you to just finish a house full of food? Govinda said like this. So, Chaitanya was defeated by logic and therefore ate the whole house. No problem for him. These are the wonderful loving exchanges which go on between the Lord and his devotees. And the Lord personally takes the prasadam. I remember having heard how in the house of Raghava Pandit, who brought these bags full of prasadam, a wonder happened once. Raghava Pandit had to go somewhere to attend some important function or activity outside of his house. And when he returned and had darshan of his deity Gopal, it was a Gopal deity, he saw that the deity had caught a cold, hatte sich total verkühlt und erkältet. And when he had darshan, he saw how, you know, tears came from the eyes of the deity and some white mucus ran down the nose, like a little boy. And the little boy goes like and all the time mucus runs here. So he asked the pujari, Gopal has caught a cold. What have you done? I don't see he has a cold. And how can a brass deity, messing deity, get a cold? You can put him in the midst of Alaska. I mean, they didn't most probably talk about Alaska at that time. But you can put him in the winter. He won't feel cold. No problem for him. But I see he has a cold. Mucus is there. Can't you see? What have you given him? Well, like always said the pujari, I have given him yogurt. Yogurt? How can you give yogurt when someone has a cold? That increases the production of mucus because the belly becomes cold inside. Maybe you didn't know, but yogurt is cooling. And Raghava Pandit went immediately in the kitchen, cooked a brahmastra, ginger, lemon, honey, and then he cut ginger and put it next to the meal, put pepper on it, so that the heat in the body of the deity would be increased and the cold would go out. The pujari didn't see anything, but Raghava Pandit or Krishna chose to have this loving exchange with the devotees. So, in our tradition, offering food is very important, and we should know that the Lord himself will accept such an offering of food. Now, I want to make a second point, which Prabhupada makes here in this purport, and then tell you something extraordinary. But let me just see. Therefore, such devotees always perform yajñas in different modes of devotional service, such as shravanam, kirtanam, smaranam, achanam. And these performances of yajña keep them always aloof from all kinds of contamination of sinful association in the material world. This yagya has been now discussed in terms of preparing food. It's an offering where you take your knife and cut your vegetables and make something. However, the idea of offering also comes in the other processes of devotional service. For instance, in chanting. Chanting should be like an offering to Krishna, an offering of sound, an offering of the holy name. Or when you hear, the hearing also must be done as a type of offering. You offer your attention. It's an interesting concept, isn't it? This is a pullover. And those who saw it were not so more attentive on the pullover. So here it is. You can all look and then come back with your attention. You have to offer your attention, not to the pullover, but to the subject matter. I'm sorry for being so nasty always. Shravanam means you offer your attention. That's an offering to God. Smaranam, remembering Krishna. This is, you offer your time. You can think so much throughout the day, but you have to think of Krishna. That's an offering to you, to Krishna. So the devotee who does these performances of yagya keeps aloof from all kinds of contamination of sinful association in the material world. A devotee always offers something to Krishna. Either he prepares prasadam and offers that. Either he does his service and he offers his energy. He offers his thoughts. He offers his time. In this way, being always a giver in his life, he is not contaminated by the material energy. However, if he stops being a yogi, someone who offers something and gives his time or his energy or anything to the material world, then this is becoming very, very difficult. Today, at the for the rest of our little offering, I want to read you a little bit from the Chaitanya Charitamrita about an important consideration. When you want to start your life of offering something to Krishna, then you will have to work a little bit in the garden of your heart. In the garden of our heart, two plants are growing. One is the Bhakti Lata Beej, or that devotion for Krishna which every one of us has. But the other plants which also grow there are the weeds, Unkraut zu Deutsch gesagt, who are growing over this Bhakti Lata Beach and are threatening the development of Krishna consciousness, just like Brennnesseln, this is a weed, you know, grows over salad, and when the Brennnesseln grow over the salad is choked. No sun comes on the salad and so on, you can't get it. So the Bhakti Lata Beach, one has to always see that simultaneously with the advancement of Krishna consciousness, the weeds don't grow. I wanted to read you something, but where is it? I'm sorry I had it, but because I want to talk about so many things today, I just... Anyways, you can believe me, I have lectured about this many times in my life, so I will just do it without. There are certain Veeds. One is called activities which are not favorable for devotional service. Like one of our members was smoking in the toilets. That's not very good for development of bhakti. Another is speaking diplomacy. That means to speak something to this person, to make him the friend, and say something else to another person. Another is jiva hingsa. Jiva hingsa means to be violent towards others. Now, you can be violent indeed. That here is the sword, which is called the tongue, which is much more hurting than a sword made from iron. You can say something very offensive and disturbing to someone. That's a veed. Be violent in your speech or thought. You can harbor a malice. Also man kann anderen gegenüber so böse sein. That's already violence in the thought. And it gets back to you. So in this way, a devotee who becomes serious sees that in the garden of the heart is so much weeds growing, and he becomes very interested to take the weeds out so that his Bhakti Lata Beach, the sprout or sprussling of devotional service, is not at all choked. Today, I want to tell you all, in the vein of this, also wo wir schon darüber sprechen, how I personally came to Krishna consciousness, and how in the beginning it was my life was so full of weeds that it was not so easy. I want to tell you about my beginning stages in Krishna consciousness in the hopes it will help you, but I must tell you very honestly, I'm writing an article, and I don't want to sit in my room alone and just write it alone, so I will do it with all of you. The inspiration is more, and your kindness will help me to remember more. So we will jump now out of the lecture. You will hear now how an insignificant person came to Krishna consciousness. After my initial meeting with the devotees, before the train station of Hamburg Dammtor, I thought constantly, day after day, about them. Especially because I tried to understand the magazine Back to Godhead, which they had put into my hands. And since I couldn't understand it, I read it every day, trying to figure out what the philosophy of these devotees was. For instance, I remember trying to read Prabhupada's Friedensformel, peace formula. There he writes that we have to understand three things in order to have peace in this world. Krishna is the supreme owner of everything. Krishna is the supreme enjoyer of everything, and Krishna is the well-wishing friend of everyone. He says, unless we do not understand this fact, there will not be peace. Being somewhat politically interested, I just couldn't understand what these things had to do with war and peace. And trying to understand and trying, and I couldn't. So it became clear to me that if I ever wanted to know what these devotees were all about and what Krishna consciousness meant, then I would have to visit them again and I would have to see the temple. And that was the thing I was deadly afraid of. The reason was that from my early childhood I had dreams of me becoming a monk. And because there were so many weeds still in the heart, weeds of desires to enjoy separately from Krishna, therefore I was deadly afraid that my weeds would be taken out of the sweater, the heart. I was defending my private collection of weeds. So much Maya. So one day I finally made up my mind to go to the temple, and I remember I left the train station. I had looked up in my city map where Bartelstraße 45 was. But when I finally stood before the Hinterhof, where the temple was situated, fear became just so strong that I passed it and went to a park. And in the park, I sat down and I was just seeing how my life went by, my friends, my hopes for a materialistic future, my plans for revolution to make this world a better place for everyone to live in a political way, my girlfriend, money, my violin I saw passing by, because I knew if I go into this temple, my material life is finished. I just knew it. And I didn't want it. I was sitting, seeing a river of material objects just floating by, when all of a sudden I heard someone say, Hare Krishna! And I looked, and there was Smita Krishna Maharaj, Smita Krishna Das Brahmachari at that time, a devotee whom I remembered from the Sankirtan group of the, or the Kirtan group of the the Hamburg temple. And he looked at me with an all-knowing smile like the Buddha. And he said, I'm just going to the temple. Would you like to come with me? I know, anyway. So then we arrived, then we went past the temple. And as soon as we were in the temple room, there was a special smell. This was a mixture of ghee, spices, sabjis, and incense. And it was very heavy and intoxicating almost. So we went up the staircase to the temple, and the Sunday program was already there, and I simply, he showed me the door. I went in and I sat on the wall and just looked at everything. There were these wonderful monks with this divine atmosphere around them. There was this colorful front. I didn't see that there were deities on on it. I just saw flowers. And they were just singing. And I must say, I felt very uncomfortable because I was so nervous. But at the same time, I just looked at everything and was very pleased and impressed. And I also saw the Vyasa-san, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Siddhi Gaura Nitai ki jai. I remember my first reaction was, oh, there's a picture which I had seen in Back to Godhead. They have a strong authority here. That's actually not so nice. I immediately, coming from my background, I didn't just appreciate first reaction. I didn't appreciate the concept of any authority. I was totally anti-authoritarian in my beliefs and the way I conducted my life at that time. And I felt a little uncomfortable, I must say, with this, because I understood what it meant immediately. You don't have a picture on a special seat if it doesn't mean respect and authority which you attribute to that personality. And then a devotee spoke very strongly and very philosophically. I was too nervous to really understand it, but it was about der geistige Meister. This much I remember. And I also remember he said that when we are trying to make advancement in spiritual life, we are just like people who want to climb a mountain and who need a guide. And he gave the example of, I still remember this to that day, that this was Mandalibhata Prabhu, that if you enter a mountainous area, you have to be careful to not go on these snow bridges, because you might just fall down. They might break. They appear to be. So therefore, you need a guide. I liked the chanting immediately. There were many interesting people, whom some of them I knew from just being in the scene of the artists and so on, a certain social group of Hamburg who was to my liking, liked the ideas and so on. And I recognized them there and said hello. And I also saw next to me was Chakravarti, at that time Peter Kaufmann. And he said also there he was the first time in the temple, just like me. And then I remember we all had to sit down, and they were serving prasadam. And they put some halava on my plate. And I liked halava so much. I thought, I've never eaten something like this in my world. Krishna put a hook on my tongue. And even when the serving was over, I always wanted to have more halava, but they told me, sorry, we have to serve other people also. And so then they brought the halava pot out of the room, and then they served the servers. But I just followed the pot and also sat in the line of the servers, and they said, sorry, we have given you three times. Everyone has only gotten two times. I'm very sorry, but it's so good. Please give me a fourth time. They said, all right, but not more. You just take your halava and then you get lost from here. And he said, all right. Please give me a lot of halava or whatever it is, because then I get faster lost. Remember this very clearly. Oh, I must say, I made a mistake The first meeting was not... let me just finish the mistake. So, at the end of the my first Sunday program, I went out of the hall and went to the down in the courtyard, and one of the guests was there, and he said, "Let's smoke to digest all this." And I said, "I found something better." I was totally sure this is my way. I just knew it. It was from Krishna. And I lost my fear. I know I won't smoke any longer. I don't. And I already knew the four rules and regulations from the back to Godhead, zurück zu Gottheit. And I said, I follow all these rules now. This is it. This is so good. I don't. So I went home and so on. So the very first time I came was also with Smita Krishna. He said that he got me. I mean, that was correct. But then I went up, I smelled the same thing, and then they put me on a sofa to wait. And I remember I waited, and then devotees came in. One was Bhakti Vaibhava Swami and others, and they paid their obeisances. And I remember I immediately jumped down from the sofa because I thought they had lost something very important. And I was searching. I thought it must have been like a very important medical pill which he needed for his maintenance, physical maintenance. And I searched, and they said, "Well, what are you doing? I'm trying to find, you know, what you lost." No, this is an obeisance. What is an obeisance? You know, we spoke English at that time, and you know, the important words were all in English. They explained me, and I remember I felt like a fool. And then someone came. Remember, it was must have been Mandali Bhadra or Vasudev, one of the two. And they said to me, "Sorry, we don't have much time for guests today. Please come on Sunday." I said, "Yeah, but come all this way. I just wanted to find out what is Krishna consciousness." And the devotee said something like, "Krishna consciousness means to be aware that God is everywhere." And then the telephone rang. He said, "I'm sorry, I have to go to the telephone." And I was there on the sofa. God is everywhere. And then he came back after the phone call and said, "Yes, as Paramatma, the super soul, he has four hands and a crown." Far out! I liked it immediately. And then he had to go again because his wife was calling him. I was sitting there. God is everywhere. He had told. And then he came back again and said, "By the way, when I said everywhere, I meant everywhere. He is in every atom and between every atom." And then he had to go again. It was just one or two sentences. And I was, oh, even better. And I remember I looked next to me. There was an Aktenschrank, sagt man in Deutsch, with metal. And I thought, he is in that Aktenschrank, but not even inside. He's in the atoms of that Aktenschrank and between the atoms. And that's all I needed to hear. I was just totally... I never thought about such thing. And then he said, "I'm sorry." He came back, "I'm sorry, don't be angry at me, but so much is going on today. Can't you come back on Sunday? We really have no time." And said, "Oh, I have enough to think about." But then he felt bad to just send me home and said, "Anyways, what's your philosophy?" And I told him my philosophy. I thought deeply about it. There was a lot of renowned psychologists in there, Adlerreich Jung and Anarchism, a mixture of that, a la Sachinandan Swami. And after he heard it, he just looked at me and said, "But you are not a pig. Aber du bist doch kein Schwein." And I thought, well, it was nice what he told me about God, but why is he so aggressive? And he said, "I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said it. And anyways, we have to say goodbye now." And I went out and I thought, whew, very strong people. I mean, if I'm going to come back to this, I will tell him he can't offend me like this. I thought all the time. But then I forgot the Aber du bist doch kein Schwein, the whatever it is. And I remember I went into the bar, the S-Bahn, and we drove home with the I drove, not home, I drove in the town. And I was thinking, God is everywhere. He's in the hearts of all these people. He's in the air. He is in the S-Bahn, the construction of the it's everywhere. And then I don't know what happened. It was Krishna's mercy. I heard from everywhere the sound of the holy name, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Hare. Just very soft, but the whole atmosphere was vibrating with the holy name. Because I just thought Krishna is everywhere. How wonderful. And I heard the name. It was a symphony, like a cosmic symphony of the holy name. I was just in ecstasy. It was my first ecstatic experience in Krishna consciousness. I was just sitting, and I was missing my station, you know, because boom, I didn't hear any. I just thought, Krishna is everywhere. Finally, I found a way to him. This was how my first visit ended. Don't know what happened after. I went some, maybe I went into a park, I think, and I rested for a long time to digest this. Good. I was at that time still going to school, and I remember I liked Krishna. I started chanting right after the second, after the Sunday program, actually, my first Sunday program. It was, I went to a huge department store, bought a Gardinenschnur and some wooden beads, put them all together. It took a whole day, and I started to chant my first rounds in my room at home, and I felt very, very wonderful. The first round took me 20 minutes. I still remember it up to this time. And I became a lover of the chanting. At that time, I was always coming to the temple, and I brought my music instruments with me, my violin and my special drum. And as it was customary, young people who were very temperamental and had their own opinions and were somewhat, they were dressed in a special way. So I won't tell you how I was dressed. It was not very, the devotees didn't like it. And I remember one day, my first confrontation with the devotee came. I was just going from the prasadam to wash my into the washing room, and I sang very loud the Hare Krishna melody in the bathing room. In our family, we would always sing very loud in the bathing room. It was something which we learned from childhood. In the bathing room means singing. more than anything else. And sing just very loud. And one devotee, he was the saxophone player of Little Richard. Those who know him, is a very intense music, soul and rock and roll or something like this. He just came out and he looked at me, and he was annoyed because I really sang so loud. It was maybe too loud. I don't know, for the temple. It was there. No one. I didn't think of it. So he just came from behind and just ripped my identification mark down, my big black mantle coat, and looked back and said, "What's wrong with you?" He said, "What's wrong with you? You come now for a few months here, for months here, and you are still wearing this dirty rag." And I just felt very, very sad. I felt sad because of the intolerance and the non-understanding. I remember this up to this day. So then, one day, the devotees offered, "Why don't we give a program in your school?" And I liked that idea very much and spoke with various teachers. And they said, "All right, we give you the Musik Aula. That's the place where all the music is. Music classes are done, a big place." I remember I went with the devotees in, and I felt very shy that, you know, everyone saw me now together with the devotees. It meant something very much for me. I remember we had one music teacher. His name was Herr Thompson. Herr Thompson. I'm so glad that I remember this name. See, this is, I can only remember it in your association. He used to always go over the music in the school with directing an invisible orchestra. He would go like, and I remember I would always used to laugh about him. And I saw him, there was the devotees were all going down to the music aula, and he came in our direction, and he went like, you know, he was really directing. He was like a like one of these zerstreute Professoren. And when he saw the devotees, he just stopped. And he went to the side. And he looked. And that's the first time where I saw him smiling, because he was always, you know, in the music. And I looked back at him, and he looked totally transcendental, Herr Thomsen. I never had any relationship to him because he was so far, far away. But at that moment, I thought, see, Krishna consciousness brings someone on the transcendental platform. I remember that very much. And next morning, I gave Herr Thomsen a Bhagavad Gita in English, and he liked it very much. He was very thankful. Then we went in the room, in the aula, and they chanted, and then they spoke. But as soon as they started to speak, our school was extremely revolutionary. People started to shout in between, and, "Can you explain that more? Why is this? And this is nonsense." And so on. And the devotee who preached was very sharp. He countered everything. And then one person whom I knew said, "That's not an answer." And he said, "But you have not even asked a question." And the room was silent from that moment on. He was so good, so strong, and so self-assured, and so just Krishna conscious. And after that, I knew, I'm going to leave the school. I'm not going to be with these people any longer. I rather like to be with devotees. I knew that in my heart. But the time was not yet ripe. So I continued in school, continued chanting, and because the temple needed Lakshmi, I worked as a gardener and supported the temple regularly with my donations. Then one day, the devotees told me, "Did you know Prabhupada is in London? Now comes to London." And as soon as I heard it, I desired actually to go to London. At that time, Prabhupada was known to me by the regular Easter ghosties of the devotees. They used to sit down in the prasadam room and read Prabhupada's letters. See, whenever Prabhupada wrote letters, these letters were photocopied. If they were significant of you know, interesting contents to everyone, and then they were sent all over the world, and we would sit down and read the letters. And one devotee, Yogeshwara Prabhu, used to comment this letter. These letters. And I liked Prabhupada very much from his letters. I saw pictures, and I, of course, heard the Chintamani prayers. And the devotees said, "Would you also like to come to London?" I said, "It's in the school time. I have to go to school." "Ach so," said the devotee. "I see," said the devotees. And I remember I was thinking very much about it. And then the devotees said one day, "We want to go to London very much, but we don't have the money. Can you give it?" And I said, "Well, I had some plans with my Lakshmi. They were different." But then I just said, "Well, they want to see Prabhupada, and I also want to see Prabhupada." And then I remembered, I went to the bank and gave my Lakshmi. I didn't have much. A whole temple of 50 people. Quite something. Gave that, and I remember when I gave it, I thought, "Well, this is the end. This is the signal. Now is the time. I will also go. I gave already so much. Now I just can go. You know, and who cares for this foolish school?" And then I remember, at that time, just before a week before Prabhupada's arrival, we heard, I was somewhere else with the school. We had a meeting of, in sociology, as a Gemeinschaftskunde, of the Oberstufe. And I was, because I was so interested and people knew, I was invited to participate in this meeting, although I was not in that class, really. They just invited me if I would like to come alone, and I said yes. And then, I still remember my professor, out of my teacher, Dr. Lange was his name, he presented a certain sociological model. Now, I was very interested in that subject and had read on my own and had read that this model is obsolete, it's also veraltet. And in the classroom, I said, "I'm sorry, what you teach us is not on the newest level." And I told him what I had read, and he became very upset with me and told me if I can see him after the class. I saw him after the class, and he said, "You know, if you correct me like this in the class, I lose my faith." But I said, "Well, but you were wrong." And he says, "I know, but I have to teach this. I am in a position to teach this. It has to go on like this. But this is not true," I said. "I know, but this is the world," he said. And then I knew I will leave this school very soon. I didn't tell him but I just knew it was Krishna telling me. That I will never come back. This was so, something clicked in me, and I said, enough of this material life. And I remember we went in the evening. Don't want to get too much into the detail. Anyways, then the seminar was not over, but I just disappeared. I just told one of my friends, you might not see me again. I'm going to see Srila Prabhupada.
Who's that?
Well, you will hear the whole talk. School will talk about it. Then I didn't want to argue. I just packed my things and disappeared. And went to London with the devotees. I remember we did kirtan all the time. We took our Radha Krishna deities with us. We gave them a whole cabinet for themselves, and we would always do kirtan on the deck in the storm. We were young people and we liked adventure. So we would sing, and it was the nicest voyage, sea voyage, which I've ever done. And then we came to London, and that's a whole different story. But I want to. Then we came to London, and finally we met Srila Prabhupada. If someone would ask me today how I came to Krishna consciousness, I can only say that it was Sri Krishna's mercy who led me through the last sections of my material life, gave me many experiences which all brought me to the understanding that I should lead a life devoted to the Lord and serve the Lord. And finally, that impression became very, very strong when I met Srila Prabhupada and decided to join his transcendental family. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Sisi Gonitai ki jai, Gaur Premanandi Hari Hari Bol. Very, very nectary. It's not, Veeam doesn't mean, it has nothing really to do with me. Veda Vyas writes it, and he collects all the memories of the devotees who are Srila Prabhupada's disciples in Germany, and wants to also put their Lebenslauf in there. And I decided not to talk about my insignificant material life, because sannyasis should not do this. That person is dead. Why should we talk about a dead man? I just decided to talk about how Krishna was merciful in my life and brought me to Krishna consciousness and to Srila Prabhupada's lotus feet. So this is now we have talked about all this, and we have also already typed the whole memories of how I met Prabhupada the first time, etc. Those of you who are interested, we'll have to wait until it is published. So, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Sisi Gaur Nitai ki jai, Gaur Premanandi Hari Bol.